Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're all about cutting through the noise, bringing you those essential insights from really groundbreaking ideas and pivotal figures.
Think of it as your shortcut, maybe, to being truly well-informed.
Exactly. Uncovering surprising facts, sparking some real aha moments. Today, we're embarking on a deeply profound journey into a powerful body of work. This was originally explored as part of the Akatra Dialogue. That's an initiative dedicated to the world's greatest thinkers and ideas.
And we're going to unpack this incredibly insightful material just for you.
Our focus today is Primo Levi.
And his seminal work, Survival in Auschwitz. It's an extraordinary book. It masterfully weaves together this rigorous, almost scientific observation with the raw, deeply personal testimony of a Holocaust survivor.
So our mission, our goal in this deep dive, what is it exactly?
Well, it's really to understand not just what Levi witnessed, which is harrowing enough, but how his analytical mind, the mind of a chemist, how that allowed him to comprehend the systematic dehumanization of Auschwitz.
And maybe more importantly.
And perhaps more importantly, yes, what profound lessons his experience holds for us today about humanity, dignity, resistance, especially when everything is designed to strip you of your very self. What does it mean to be human then?
Akatra Foundation presents the Akatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Okay, let's start with the man himself, Primo Michele Levi, born in Turin, Italy, 1919.
A chemist, a gifted writer, and most profoundly, a survivor of Auschwitz. His life, tragically cut short in 1987, was really dedicated to bearing witness.
And his most enduring legacy, of course, is Survival in Auschwitz.
Right, originally published in Italian as Se questo è un uomo.
If this is a man.
Exactly. First appeared way back in 1947, it pretty quickly became this foundational text.
Not just history, though.
No, not just historical testimony. It's a profound philosophical inquiry into dignity, memory, the moral imperative, really, to speak truth to power. It explores the very essence of human existence pushed to its absolute limits.
What I find so compelling, is how he brought this unique perspective, his scientific training.
Yeah, that precision.
That precise analytical mind, yeah. But he coupled it with this extraordinary literary sensitivity.
It's quite a combination.
It is. The result is a work that feels, well, both clinical in its observations of the camp's mechanics,
Almost attached sometimes.
right, and yet incredibly moving in its emotional resonance. It's this dual lens, I think, that lets him ask that haunting question.
What does it mean to be a human being?
When the world around you is meticulously designed to strip away every last vestige of that humanity. And it's a question that unfortunately still echoes today, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
So to really get Levi's perspective, we need to understand the crucible that forged him. Let's trace his journey, particularly that transformative year from capture to liberation.
Absolutely. It puts everything he wrote later into such stark relief. His early life in Turin, for instance, was very pivotal.
Tell me about that.
He came from a middle-class Jewish family, secular, intellectual. They were steeped in a tradition that really valued education, scientific inquiry.
The chemist background starts early.
Right. And literature, too, especially Dante, which becomes significant later. These were the rationalist, humanist traditions shaping his worldview.
But then the world starts to change around him. Mussolini, the racial laws.
Exactly. That was 1938. The laws officially marked him as an outsider. A cool foreshadowing, really.
And his scientific mind. It became more than just a professional tool.
I think so. That meticulous approach to observation, to problem solving, it started to become this almost involuntary mechanism for survival, for understanding what was happening.
And yet he still managed to finish his degree.
He did, yeah. Completed his chemistry degree with honors in 1941, despite those laws. Then, after Italy's armistice in 43, he made this idealistic but very brief decision to join the Italian resistance.
Which led to his capture.
It did, in December 1943, and then came a pivotal, almost fateful moment. He confessed his Jewish identity to his captors.
Why?
He believed it was less dangerous than being identified as a partisan fighter. But that decision, it sealed his path directly to Auschwitz.
And that path, that journey, February 1944, the cattle car.
The horrifying, suffocating, dehumanizing journey. Then arrival at Auschwitz, the brutality was immediate. Stripped of his name, his hair, possessions, everything marking him as an individual.
Reduced to a number.
1745-17.
Yep.
It wasn't just an arrival. It was this grotesque initiation into a completely inverted world.
governed by hunger, fear.
Overwhelming fear, the bitter cold. He had to learn the camp's barbaric rules, its language that pidgin German incredibly fast, just to survive day to day.
You mentioned this inverted world. What did prominence even mean there?
Well, in the terrifying logic of Auschwitz, prominence wasn't about success as we know it. It was about securing tiny, microscopic advantages. Anything that might extend your life by another day, another hour.
Like the chemical examination.
Exactly. That was his unexpected career breakthrough, if you can even call it that. Late 1944, he managed to pass this surprisingly formal chemical exam.
And that led to the lab assignment, Commando 98.
That's right. The Buna Synthetic Rubber Plant's laboratory.
That sounds like it must have been absolutely crucial. How significant was that transfer? Was it really the difference between life and death?
Oh, it was undeniably a literal lifeline. Working indoors, shielded from that lethal Polish winter.
Right.
Less physically demanding labor. It offered this precious thin shield against the daily attrition claiming so many lives.
And practical benefits, too.
Small but crucial opportunities, yeah. Mm. To trade small items, maybe scavenged from the lab for extra rations of bread.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, beyond the physical.
There was something else.
There was. It granted him something perhaps even more vital. A small pocket of mental space.
To observe.
To observe, to analyze, and right. Critically, to remember. These faculties were absolutely indispensable for his later ability to bear witness.
And then January 1945, liberation, but not a straightforward way for him.
No, another twist of fate. Levi contracted scarlet fever. That confined him to the camp infirmary.
Which saved him from the death march.
Inadvertently, yes. It saved him from that brutal march that killed so many who could still walk. He called the period right after the SS fled the 10 days.
Describe that.
It was this chaotic limbo. The SS gone, but liberation not fully arrived. The remaining prisoners, amidst the dead and dying, they collectively forged this fragile community. Foraging for food, caring for each other, creating a spontaneous kind of order out of utter collapse. It's a remarkably moving climax in the book.
Showing that human impulse.
That resilient human impulse for mutual aid, for structure, even then.
And as you said, that moment, It marked the beginning of his life's second chapter.
A perhaps even more arduous chapter. The long, circuitous journey home, and the even longer, more profound mission of transforming unspeakable trauma into powerful, enduring testimony.
Okay, so we've traced the timeline. Let's dive deeper now into Levi's unique intellectual and moral framework. What really sets his perspective apart, he wasn't just a survivor, he was a thinker.
Absolutely. What's truly fascinating is how he operated as a scientific humanist.
What does that mean in this context?
He didn't view Auschwitz through a lens of mystical evil, you know. He saw it as a monstrous, meticulously designed social experiment.
Horrifyingly logical.
In its own perverse way, yes. His belief was in reason, empirical evidence, individual dignity. He saw the Holocaust as the logical, horrifying culmination of fanaticism, bureaucracy, and maybe most chillingly, widespread indifference.
And this scientific approach, it feeds directly into his central question, if this is a man.
It does. He forces us to confront how fragile humanity actually is, a delicate construct built on shared memory, culture, communication.
Things the Nazis tried to destroy.
Precisely. Their goal, as he saw it, was to create the empty man, methodically stripping away these defining elements until only a biological shell remained.
Which brings us to maybe his most challenging idea, the gray zone.
Yes. I think it's his most enduring and perhaps most difficult intellectual contribution. He profoundly rejected that simple black and white view, victims and perpetrators.
It wasn't that simple.
No. He forced us to examine that agonizing liminal space occupied by individuals like the capos, the prisoner functionaries.
Right. Prisoners put in charge of other prisoners.
Yeah, exactly. Individuals who, in order to survive, found themselves becoming complicit in ways small or large in the very system that oppressed them.
It's deeply uncomfortable, isn't it? Because he examines this with such honesty.
Intellectual honesty, yes. And profound pity, crucially. Never judgment.
It forces us to confront those difficult questions about moral compromise under unimaginable pressure. It really makes you question, you know, what you might do.
It complicates the easy narratives. Innocent victims, monstrous villains. It pushes for a more nuanced, empathetic understanding.
And what drove him to write? What was the core motivation?
Primarily for Levi, it was this urgent, almost physiological need to tell.
A need?
A need, yeah. He saw it as a moral imperative. To bear witness, ensure the horrors were never forgotten, particularly for the millions who perished and couldn't share their own stories. It felt like an obligation.
And beyond telling, there was understanding.
Yes, that need to tell was matched by an equally powerful drive to understand. Writing for him was an act of ordering the chaos.
Applying the chemist's mind again.
Exactly. Not just describing what happened, but meticulously analyzing the how, the mechanics of dehumanization. He firmly believed that genuine understanding was the only way to prevent it from happening again. Never again required understanding how it happened.
How did he approach the adversity while he was in Auschwitz?
His approach was characterized by remarkable observation and restraint. He maintained what he called a split consciousness.
How so?
He was simultaneously a participant in the horror, experiencing it, and yet also a detached analyst of its dynamics. He studied the camp's brutal logic with the precision he'd bring to a chemical experiment. It's a truly unique lens.
And you see that in the writing itself.
Oh, absolutely. The prose reflects it. Calm, lucid, devoid of hyperbole, he presents the facts, allowing the inherent horror to speak for itself.
No need to embellish.
None at all. And, you know, maybe this analytical detachment was also a survival mechanism, a way to find some tiny semblance of control, of agency through understanding in a world designed to render him utterly powerless.
As his story unfolds, certain moments just leap out, turning points, really. In his understanding, maybe even his survival, can you walk us through a few of those?
Certainly. The first, and maybe the most brutally impactful, has to be the arrival and selection.
Yeah.
February 1944.
Stepping off the train.
Stepping off that train into a reality beyond any comprehension. Families torn apart with a casual wave of the hand. The selection, arbitrary.
Life and death decided instantly.
Instantly. And Levi immediately became inventory. His identity erased, replaced by the tattoo 17417. It was the immediate, undeniable demonstration of the camp's logic.
Yeah.
Your life was conditional, meaningless to them.
This was the violent birth into the camp's logic, where your very existence was conditional. Just horrifying.
Then there's that truly surreal episode, the chemical examination, summer of 1944.
Right, you mentioned this earlier.
Imagine Levi, emaciated, ragged, trying to recall complex scientific knowledge, nitrobenzene properties, the Friedel-Crafts reaction.
For this pristine German examiner, Dr. Panwitz.
Exactly. The chasm between their worlds, the intellectual rigor of his past versus the brutal, grinding present. It's an unbelievable scene.
It really is. And passing that exam, how did that impact him beyond just the practical lifeline of the lab job?
Practically, it was immense, as we said. The transfer was a lifesaver.
Yeah.
But maybe even more profoundly, psychologically. It was a moment where his pre-war intellectual identity still mattered.
It counted for something.
It counted. It was a validation that he was more than just a number, more than inventory. It gave him back this tiny sliver of his former self, a crucial psychological anchor in a world trying to erase him completely.
And the third turning point, the one that resonates so deeply on a human level.
That has to be his encounter with Lorenzo Peroni.
The Italian civilian bricklayer.
Yes, working near the camp. Lorenzo secretly gave Levi extra food. And just as importantly, profound moral support for 6 months.
Asking nothing in return.
Asking absolutely nothing in return. And what's so significant about Lorenzo's selfless act, it was a moral anchor in a place designed to prove that man is a wolf to man, homo homini lupus.
Lorenzo was proof against that.
He was living proof that goodness, compassion, human connection could still exist. Even flourish somehow in the absolute abyss. He literally saved Levi not just from starvation, but from that more insidious threat, utter despair.
Levi himself said.
He said, Lorenzo reminded me that there still existed a just world outside our own. He was this beacon of enduring, unasked for humanity.
Okay, so we've looked at his life, his ideas, these critical moments. Now let's bring it back to us. What does Levi's journey teach us today? How do his struggles connect to universal human experiences?
Well, first, I think Levi's story offers this stark, chilling reminder of the fragility of civilization. He shows us, with just unflinching clarity, that societal norms, ethical codes, the institutions we rely on, they can dismantle with terrifying speed. Maintaining them isn't passive. It's an active, constant project. It requires vigilance from all of us.
And then there's that story of Steinlauf, the older prisoner.
Ah, yes, the Steinlauf anecdote. In the midst of all the filth and deprivation, Steinlauf insisted on washing daily in freezing, dirty water.
Not for hygiene, really.
No, it was an act of profound will. He famously told Levi, and it's worth quoting, "We are slaves, deprived of every right, but one thing is left to us, the faculty of refusing our consent."
Wow. So dignity becomes an internal choice.
Exactly. A profound act of self-preservation. Sylov's ritual was this powerful illustration of maintaining self-respect, discipline. A tiny, daily defiance asserting he was still a man, even when everything external sought to reduce him to an animal. It's about choosing your response, even when you can't choose your circumstances.
And we have to come back to Lorenzo Ferrone again here, don't we?
Absolutely. Demonstrating the power of small acts of kindness. His individual actions, they seem so small against the vast machinery of the Holocaust, but they were profoundly significant.
Hope and physical sustenance.
Both. Proving that even in the darkest times, individual compassion can shine through, can make a life or death difference. And then there's that other deeply resonant moment, the Dante recitation.
With Jean, the piccolo.
Yes. Levi describing that arduous, almost desperate struggle to recall and translate lines from Dante's Ulysses Canto, right there in the Inferno of Auschwitz.
The verse, consider your origins.
Consider your origins. You were not made to live as brutes, but to follow virtue and knowledge. It was just this moment of profound spiritual and intellectual resistance.
It's almost unbelievable to find that there. What did that act mean, do you think, internally?
I think it was an incredible assertion of enduring humanity. It showed how culture, literature, shared intellectual heritage, they could be powerful forms of resistance.
Connecting them to something bigger.
Connecting them to a world, a human identity that transcended the camp's brutal grasp. It reminded them of who they were and who they were meant to be. A crucial flicker of light in the darkness.
Which leads us straight to one of Levi's most critical lessons, I think, about memory.
Yes, that memory is a moral duty. His unwavering insistence on remembering, on documenting meticulously, despite the immense personal pain.
It couldn't have been easy.
Not at all. But it transformed his individual suffering into collective knowledge, a vital warning for all of humanity. Bearing witness becomes a responsibility, not just an option. And finally, there's that chilling realization about the danger of indifference.
He talks about a public hanging.
Yes, the hanging of a rebel, and the silent, broken, almost indifferent response of the other prisoners. This grim scene showed how the system systematically crushed collective spirit, crushed compassion.
And the broader lesson.
The devastating lesson is that widespread indifference, the comfort of looking away, the willingness to remain silent, these are the very conditions that allow atrocities like the Holocaust to happen. Indifference is complicity, in a way.
We've covered so much ground, it's incredibly powerful stuff. But if we had to distill it down now, maybe three core, unforgettable takeaways from Primo Levi's life and work for our listener today.
Okay, let's try. First, an emotional insight. I'd say it's the preservation of humanity. Levi demonstrated that core human dignity, things like intellectual curiosity, compassion, moral reflection, they can be preserved, even under the most systematic assault imaginable.
Like the Dante recitation.
Exactly. That's a testament to humanity's profound resistance. And this offers, I think, a powerful hope. External circumstances might be beyond our control, often, but our internal response, our moral agency, that remains fundamentally within our power.
Okay, that's the emotional insight. What about intellectually?
An intellectual insight. It has to be the complexity of moral choice. Levi's concept of the gray zone just revolutionized our understanding of moral behavior under extreme duress.
Moving beyond simple judgments.
Absolutely. It challenges those simplistic judgments, reveals the nuanced, often impossible, ethical landscape of survival. It compels us to embrace a more informed, compassionate, and critically aware understanding of human nature under pressure. It's less comfortable, but more true.
And finally, a universal takeaway, something practical.
A universal insight, I think, is the obligation to bear witness. Surviving difficult experiences, whether it's personal trauma or witnessing collective atrocity, it creates a kind of obligation to testify.
Like Levi felt.
Precisely. His profound commitment to writing transformed his personal agony into collective knowledge, into wisdom. And this applies, I believe, to anyone who has endured hardship. Their experience gains enduring meaning when it contributes to others' understanding, resilience, and hopefully a commitment to justice.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.
You know, Primo Levi's relevance today feels starkly apparent. We see, unfortunately, rising authoritarianism in places, the insidious spread of dehumanizing language.
It feels very current.
It does. His precise analytical insights into how dehumanization actually functions, step by insidious step, remain urgently relevant. His work is like this intellectual bulwark against denial, against forgetting, a steadfast commitment to factual truth in a world that often, well, resists it. It reminds us to stay vigilant.
Primo Levi's extraordinary testimony really challenges us, doesn't it? To examine our own capacity for both moral compromise, maybe, and for moral courage, in a world where systematic oppression still manifests in new and insidious ways sometimes, how do we maintain our humanity under pressure?
Big question.
Huge questions. How do we resist systems that demand complicity, whether it's subtle or overt? And how do we bear witness to difficult truths in our own time? How do we make sure these lessons are never, ever forgotten? We really encourage you to engage with these questions, maybe even read Survival in Auschwitz for yourself if you haven't. Because in Levi's precise prose, his profound insights, we find not just a historical account, we find essential tools for understanding our own turbulent times, and importantly, invaluable resources for maintaining hope, even when faced with humanity's persistent, sometimes terrifying, capacity for both great evil and, thankfully, extraordinary good.